Can you imagine even having sex on Thanksgiving? Oh my God.
Such a good point.
So fall.
No, thank you.
That's a pre-dinner activity.
Yeah. And dinner's at 2 o'clock. So
post turkey trot, pre-dinner.
Really small window.
Yeah. Oh, Dawson, look, there's your mom.
Back to you, Bob.
And welcome to Back to You, Bob, a Dawson's Creek podcast. We are your hosts, Christina and Micah, and this is episode 308, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, which originally aired on November 24th, 1999, which was literally the day before Thanksgiving.
Really?
Yeah, I looked it up.
The night before?
Yeah.
And this is a Thanksgiving episode.
I love that.
I love that.
I love that they didn't take a week off. It aligned perfectly.
You know what? I have memories of Thanksgiving. You remember Survivor?
Mm-hmm.
Survivor never took a holiday off. Sometimes it aired on Wednesdays, sometimes it aired on Thursdays, depending on the season. But Survivor would air on Thanksgiving, I believe, and certainly the night before. So I love when shows don't take time off for holidays because we're going to be watching.
Yeah, especially young, like Dawson's Creek fans. The college crowd might be out, but we were at home.
You need your shows over the holidays. You still have free time.
Absolutely.
Well, God bless. What are we drinking?
We're drinking a Thanksgiving margarita. I'm happy with this find. It is apple cider, pear juice, tequila, Grand Marnier, and then you can garnish it however you want. Salt on the rim, sugar on the rim, cinnamon stick. I love a cocktail with pear juice.
I was going to say, I was waiting for you to finish, but I might like pear juice.
Yeah. So I don't know if you remember, but when I lived in LA, we used to go to the Lobster all the time and I would get this pear whiskey cocktail there. And I thought it was the best thing I'd ever had. And then right before I moved, they took it off the menu and I was like, it's meant to be. My favorite cocktail is gone.
And so am I. I really think I like pears. It's something that I don't really think about. But when I have pears, I like them. But I never go out of my way to get a pear. Anyway.
I got this holiday season a box of pears. Like, you know when people send you fruit? You can bake them in the oven with a little bit of butter, a little bit of brown sugar, a little bit of oatmeal on top. And it's like a healthy-ish cobbler situation. Oh my gosh.
Oh.
It was so good.
Pears always remind me of Ghost.
I've never seen Ghost.
What?
I know.
That is insane. You need to watch Ghost.
I know.
Like immediately almost.
Okay.
Today.
All right. I'm going to go. You can handle the rest of this podcast.
Yeah. There's a, you correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe there's a scene where Demi Moore and Tony Goldwyn are eating pears. No spoilers. No spoilers. Someone dies. It is called Ghost.
And that's not Patrick Swayze. Patrick Swayze isn't in Ghost.
No, he sure is. He sure is in Ghost.
Oh, okay.
There are three way friend group. It's Demi Moore, Tony Goldwyn, Patrick Swayze.
Okay, great. I'm glad we cleared that up.
Please see Ghost. If you haven't seen Ghost, please see Ghost. Whoopi Goldberg won her Oscar for it, playing Oda Mae Brown. Please see Ghost.
Okay, I'll report back. Tell us what the episode's about.
So this episode is sponsored by Pears and Ghosts. So this episode opens with PC and Jen in the grocery store. They're shopping for ingredients for Thanksgiving. Grams is having a huge dinner, and while the two of them shop, they discuss their new friends with benefits situation. They're getting used to how weird this is, going from friends to lovers. They haven't done anything yet, but they're eagerly awaiting the moment when they do. Pacey will not be attending Grams' dinner because he's going to be spending it with his dysfunctional family. But Jen tells him anyway that Andy will not be coming to celebrate. She will be celebrating with Jack and their dad. So the two snuggle in the store and Jen can't help but laugh. This is so weird for her. So back at her house, Grams is trying to tell her something, but Jen keeps interrupting her. Grams asks Jen to keep in mind what Thanksgiving is all about. Family, being grateful, being thankful, forgiveness. And that is right when Jen walks into her room and discovers her mother, Helen, who is visiting from New York. As you may recall, Jen's parents shipped her off to Capeside in the first episode of the series after finding her in bed with one of her boyfriends, and they later refused Jen's request to come home at the end of season one. When alone, Grams swears to Jen that she had no idea that Helen, her daughter, was coming for Thanksgiving. She tells Jen that Jen has grown so much since she's come to Capeside, and she's definitely ready to face her mom and tell her mom everything she's feeling. At the Leary household, meanwhile, Gail is staying there in the guest room while she looks for an apartment. And she's in full Thanksgiving mode. You know, she's playing homemaker, she's baking pies, while Mitch is in the TV room watching football. And Dawson can't help but notice how weird this all is, but he doesn't hate it. Gail tells Dawson that she ran into Jen's mom earlier around town, and she theorizes that it must be about Jen's half-sister Eve that Dawson recently discovered. But Dawson confesses to Gail that he never told Jen. He backed out. So Gail is shocked, and she and Dawson can't believe what a coincidence it is that all the Ryan women are under the same roof for the first time in years. When it comes to Joey and the Potters, meanwhile, she and Bessie are also cooking and baking some food for the dinner at Jen's house, and they can't believe how bad at baking they are. They talk about how good their mom was and how they did not inherit that gene from her. They discuss how hard the holidays are without her and how they expect her to walk through the door at any minute. So it comes time for the Thanksgiving dinner, and it turns out that Andy and Jack's plans fell through. Their dad couldn't come to town, so they arrive to the dinner at the same time as Pacey, who's decided to join Graham's dinner before he heads to his house. Pacey and Andy get into a little bit of a fight, and they argue over who should leave, but Jack convinces them both to stay. It is Thanksgiving, after all. So Jen and her mom end up talking while her mom is getting ready, and Helen says that she can't believe how beautiful Jen's getting. And Jen watches her mom get dressed and put her pearls on and makeup, and she says that she remembers how much she admired her mom when she was little, and she always loved watching her get ready. Helen says that Jen thought she was the most important person in the world. Helen gives her a gift. It's something that Grams gave her at Jen's age. It's a set of pearls that Jen's always loved, but she turns them down. She has nowhere to wear them. Maybe she could wear them at home, she says, if home were still New York City. But that's not her home. Not anymore. So when Jen meets up with Dawson and Joey, Dawson asks if Jen's mom has any reason for being in town. You know, anything new, any news? He's definitely poking around for some information. But she says it's just a visit. She says her mom has no idea who Jen really is. And Joey says none of their parents do. Their parents love them, but they don't really know them. Not their true selves. And sometimes parents leave before they really get the chance to know them. Joey says she would love to know things about her mom, like all of her Thanksgiving recipes and what her mom was like when she was their age, but she can't ask her. So this hits Jen, and Joey asks Jen to just give her mom a chance. Dawson, meanwhile, meets Jen's mom, Helen, alone on the dock, and he tells her all about Eve, how he met her, how she was looking for her birth mother, and how she had a picture of Helen. Helen says that if Eve is gone now, there's no reason that Jen needs to know. Dawson says he thinks that Helen needs to tell Jen the truth. And she tells Dawson that he's out of line, but they both agree they don't want Jen to be hurt. Jack and Pacey, meanwhile, have a conversation while they set the table, and Joey and Andy are on the porch watching them. Jack tells Pacey that Andy brings him up a lot, while Joey tells Andy that Pacey doesn't bring her up much at all. Dawson is still really freaked out by how well his parents are getting along, and when he pries further, he learns that their divorce is officially final. That's what's changed. The Learys are done as a family. So Joey comforts Dawson through this revelation, and Dawson thinks that, you know, after a year of ifs and buts, any closure is good. They agree that real families are the ones that you make. So when it comes time for Thanksgiving dinner, everyone goes around and says how thankful they are and what they're thankful for. The theme is mainly being grateful for having amazing friends. When Jen and her mom, Helen, finally get alone to talk, Helen says she thinks she made a great decision sending her to Graham's. Jen has made amazing friends here. That's something Helen has longed for her entire life. Jen says no matter how great friends are, they're not family. Jen asks why. Why her mom felt the need to ship her away. This is when Helen tells Jen the truth, that she had a baby at her age and gave the baby up for adoption. So when she saw Jen in bed with someone, she just knew what she had to do. Jen can't believe the hypocrisy of this. Instead of telling Jen the truth when they caught her, they sent her away. Jen accuses her mom of only keeping the secret because she didn't want her dad finding out. Helen says she's not ready to be alone and her husband can never know. Jen says her mom is selfish and being alone would mean that her mom needs to take a long, hard look at herself. And then she would see what Jen has known for a long time. There's nothing there. So fresh off the emotional conversation, Jen takes Pacey to the gardening shed, and she's ready to take part in their new Friends with Benefits deal. She's taking his clothes off, but he says he's not into this angry, emotional sex vibe. Pacey tells Jen that seeing your parents as real people with real problems is painful but liberating. Trust him, he knows. It's not worth the energy despising them for it. So Jen has a change of heart due to this conversation, and she says goodbye to her mom and realizes that her mom shipping her off to Capeside didn't have anything to do with Jen. She didn't hate Jen. She hated herself. Helen says that Jen has already turned out to be a better person than she has. So the episode ends with all six friends around the campfire. Dawson says, it's been a while since all of them have hung out, and it's really nice. He says, in a world where the people who raise you let you down, it's good to have friends to turn to. And that is episode 308. Guess who's coming to dinner?
Love that last scene.
Yes. Oh, what an episode.
Love it.
Dawson's does Thanksgiving.
Dawson is so annoying, but we'll get into it.
We will. So who wrote this episode?
This episode was written by Heidi Farrer. She was with us last season for episode 216, Be Careful What You Wish For, which is the episode where Dawson and Andy get drunk at the jazz club, and then Dawson roasts his entire family at his surprise birthday party. Great episode. You can check that one out if you want to hear more about her. She's a great little writer, and this is her last episode with us. Two of two.
Two solids.
Definitely. Really good episodes.
Who directed Heidi's opus?
This episode was directed by Jim Charleston. I was trying to do some digging around him, and I couldn't really find anything on Google. He directed a bunch of stuff: Touched by an Angel, Chicago Hope, The X-Files, Nash Bridges, Lois and Clark, which I loved. Lois and Clark was like one of my shows growing up. I loved Dean Cain. I had the biggest crush on him. And then little aside, I used to have to go to CBS Radford sometimes, which is a lot, to do deliveries. And you have to go through like a security gate to get on and off the lot. And one day I became friendly with the security guard because I would go there kind of regularly as an assistant. And I pulled on and we were chit-chatting. And then Dean Cain just walked up and started talking to the security guard because they were friends. And he was like, hey, how are you? And I was like, hi, good. And then he stood there for about 2 minutes, talked with the security guard, left, said goodbye to me. And I looked at the security guard and he looked at me and he goes, that was Superman. I was like, oh, I know. Oh,
okay.
I know.
Lois and Clark was also my jam.
Loved it.
My jam. Loved it. Recorded it. Same thing like Dawson's, like VHS. Watched every episode 10 million times until the next week, and then I would record over it. Remember when he proposed to Lois, Terry Hatcher?
Love.
And it was a big season finale cliffhanger.
Yes.
And it paused on her face. And then in the premiere, he was like, Lois, will you marry me? And she said, who's asking? Clark or Superman? And then that's how you knew that Lois, oh my God.
Knew, yes. Both of them, obsessed.
Oh my God, obsessed. That was such a good series. He was also one of my crushes. And you know, I think my boyfriend looks like him.
Actually, you're right.
And with the first Halloween, I think that we like celebrated together, I suggested he should go as Clark Kent.
Did he?
Yeah. So I went as like Superman. I just got like a Superman hoodie. It was like a quickie Superman, but he did like the glasses, Clark Kent, Superman shirt under the white dress shirt kind of thing.
Love it.
I was like, this is my Dean Cain fantasy. So how did Dean look when he saw him?
Oh my God. So good. He was in like a gym outfit. I was like, yes, this is everything I've ever wanted.
Love it. And you know, Dean played, this is now a Dean Cain podcast. Dean Cain played Brenda's French boyfriend in 90210 that she kind of left.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
There's that famous scene when Brenda and Dean Cain run into Dylan and Kelly, and that's how Brenda finds out that Dylan and Kelly are together. And Brenda calls Kelly a whore, and she's like, Brenda, how could you? And then Brenda says, if it looks like a duck and it talks like a duck.
Wait, isn't that what Ty said?
In what?
In Dawson's Creek.
Oh.
About
Jack.
Yeah.
My mind went to Clueless because, you know, Brittany Murphy. I was like, no, she said, you're just a virgin who can't drive.
The superior die, Brittany Murphy. Okay, we're off course. But anyway, so
okay.
Jim Charleston, he directed a bunch of stuff and then he stopped directing in 2003. And then he did nothing for 3 years. And then he came back and he was first AD for three films from 2003 to 2013. And then that's it. So I'm like, did he, like, maybe he's one of those people that like went off to be a professor or have a family or, you know, like there's a million different scenarios, but I couldn't find anything out on Google. So Jim, if you're listening, if you want to like just fill us in on your life story, that would be great.
Wow. So an AD stands for assistant director, and it's someone who, well, in TV, it's someone who's in-house with every episode of the series. Now directors change from week to week. So the AD is kind of like the mainstay. We'll tell the director like, oh, usually when we shoot at the Ice House, here's how it goes down. Or usually we, you know, they're just like the go-to for the director to use as a resource, how this show does it. So if he went to film, maybe he had to start over as an AD and he couldn't really get those directing gigs. Who knows, though? Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? And I have to say, it's becoming more and more common on hour-longs, limited series, the kind of shows that I've been doing the last few years. There will often be only one or two directors per season for like an 8-episode season. And there will be one AD per director. Like, it will be their AD. But because it's a limited series, everyone's kind of developing everything together. So there isn't that need for like a mainstay person to say, like, this is the norm.
Yes. Yeah. Right. And so let's say if it's an 8-episode limited series, like Bridgerton or whatever, let's say there'll be a director for episodes 1 through 4 and then a director for episodes 5 through 8. Do they call that like block 1 and block 2 or something? Is there like a word for that?
Yeah. I'm assuming that that would be cross-boarded material. And I think we've talked about it before, but cross-boarding means you shoot multiple episodes at the same time rather than shooting like everything for episode 1, everything for episode 2. You'll shoot like everything for episodes 1 through 4. And that allows for like if you have I don't watch Bridgerton, but if you're at a castle and you're there for 2 days, you can shoot every scene at that castle for episodes 1 through 4 at the same time.
Yes.
So yes, we would call that block 1. Is all the episodes that one person directs, and then block 2 would be the other.
Yeah.
Yeah. So great episode from Heidi and Jim.
Asterisk. 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 Asterisk.
Asterisk.
Okay. Well, to be continued when we open it up, because I'm about to drop a bombshell on all of you.
Oh my God. I can't wait.
Drama. Who's the guest cast shout out? I already know who it is.
It is Mel Harris playing Helen Lindley, of course. She is one of those actors where you see her face and you know her, but you can't figure out what you know her from. And that's because she's been in a million things. She was a regular. She was one of the leads on 30 Something, which was, I believe, 1987 to 1991.
It was so
Micah's face.
Good. It was so, I was like 5 and I was watching it and it was so inappropriate and it was amazing. And correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, you won't because you won't know this. I believe it was the first show to show 2 men in bed together.
I believe that's true.
Not a sex scene, but just 2 men in bed talking, like just a going to bed scene.
Yeah, I do believe that's true.
We learned in Bob Thompson's class.
Yeah.
At Syracuse. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
That's why I know. I was going to say, I think I learned that in school.
Yeah.
Shout out to Bob Thompson, by the way.
Shout out to Bob Thompson, who's famous. Like, he pops up on CNN and like weird places.
If there's ever an academic weighing in on something pop culture, it's probably Bob Thompson.
Yeah.
Well, anywho.
Mel Harris.
She has many small arcs on TV series. Like, she'll do like a 2, 3, 4 episode arc. She has 70 different film and TV credits. She was on Saints and Sinners, which was a primetime soap. She was in 61 episodes of that. And then her last two things are films. 2020, she was in a film called King of Knives. And 2024, this year, she's in a film called Queen of Knives. So I'm assuming that is a sequel to King of Knives.
Wow. She's one of those people, you know her, and she was so good as Jen's mom.
She was good.
What a cold, heartless woman.
This is her only episode, but she made an impact.
Yeah, we'll get into it. We'll get into it for show. Oh, yeah. For show, for show.
For shiz. Look up her credits. You will absolutely know something on there.
For sure.
Anyway, goodbye, Helen. Thank you.
Now, we do see Jen's mom again later on in the series, and it is not played
not
by Mel.
Not her. Yeah, so I guess it's goodbye, Mel, not goodbye, Helen.
Goodbye, Mel.
Goodbye, Mel.
Goodbye, Yellow Brick Road. So what about the music moments?
For me, it's Alanis Morissette.
For sure.
That I Would Be Good by Alanis Morissette plays at the end when Pacey is comforting Jen in the shed, and then it comes back after the commercial break again. And it's just such a good one. And also, it really makes me happy that Alanis wasn't a stickler with her licensing, because every Alanis song so far has been in both the streaming and the original. We love that.
I mean, Alanis is God. I mean, literally God. She plays God in Dogma, but she is God in general in life. And she's amazing. And the reason that I like the usage of this song is because they also used the song in the season 2 finale, Parental Discretion Advised, when Jen goes back to Graham's and asks to move back in. And then she asks if Jack can move in. So I like that it was a very Jen-centric episode. And if that felt intentional, I don't know if it was, but I'm going to tell myself that it was, because I want to think that the people that are in charge make decisions like that.
Yeah, totally. A little callback to the Jen emotional episodes, for sure. What about you? The same song?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I did enjoy the song that played at the beginning of the episode. Right. It was a random scene. Nothing super important, but I didn't remember it until I watched this episode, but I did enjoy it.
When they're shopping?
America by Bree Sharp. It was kind of to the tune of like, there she goes, but it was not that. It was like on the radio instead of there she goes.
Beautiful.
Anywho, loves.
Good app, good music, good everything.
What's your past versus Prezi?
I don't really know if I have one. One might come out as we talk about the episode, but nothing off the top of my mind. What about you?
My past versus present, I guess, you know, it's what we talk about all the time. It's like when we were a kid, you could just totally buy that Dawson would go up to this woman and say, should tell your daughter the truth. But now I'm like, oh my God, the audacity of Dawson. But we'll get into it.
The audacity of Dawson. Okay. Well, now that you've opened this up to me, him talking to Helen when he's like, I dated your daughter and I still care for her very much. And this is what you should do. And then for him to go up to his parents and be like, what are we doing here? Are you part of the family? Are you this? Are you that? Tell me what's happening. Like, I can't with him.
You know what? If I were to read that on like a episode summary, I get it. Because like Dawson's defending his friend against the mother who's not been great. And Dawson, who his parents are playing not mind games with him, but they're not being forthright. And they're boomeranging him a little bit. They're whiplashing him a little bit. So on paper, you read that, oh, yeah, that makes sense. But it's something about the delivery. It's just so self-righteous.
Yes.
And condescending. And you just don't talk to your parents that way or any really adult.
It's the tone. It's the tone for me.
It's the tone for me.
All right. Let's open it up.
All right. I'm gonna start the episode with the bombshell.
Drop it. Asterisk.
So according to this book, which I will be reading and I will be giving you all the tidbits of as we move on through the pod. It's called Freaks, Gleeks, and Dawson's Creek, How 17 Shows Transformed Television, written by Thea Glassman. So I will be reading that and I will be bringing all the tea. It was released last year. To recap, last week we discussed that the cast did not like the direction that the show was headed in this season, and especially the Jen and Pacey Friends with Benefits storyline. And they kind of went to the network and caused a little revolt, which ended up getting the showrunner fired or replaced. Mm-hmm. So in that vein, we thought maybe last week's episode was the one that did them in. But actually, I believe it was this one now that I've read this tidbit. So this episode was rewritten at the last minute because it originally contained a Jen and Pacey sex scene in the school bathroom. Or some type of hooking up scene in the school bathroom. The script was at the last minute rejected by the WB and the actors. And so although Heidi Ferrer retains credit, Tom Capinos, Gina Fattor, and Greg Berlanti wrote a new script in one night. Tom Capinos describes this episode as, quote, a personal career low, unquote.
Wow.
So I wish I read this before I reached out to Tom Capinos. I sent him an email and asked him to come on the pod. Didn't know that he kind of sees Dawson in this episode as a personal career low. Probably won't be getting him. So yeah, I don't even know if this episode was originally supposed to be a Thanksgiving episode, or I don't know. I'll read the book and I'll get the tea on that. But this was the episode that shifted the showrunner situation.
Wow. Well, I have to say, I did not feel that like at all.
I did not feel it. No. Like if you told me last week's episode was written in a night and it was a last minute rewrite, sure. But this episode actually feels very well plotted and great, honestly.
I agree. That's so interesting. Yeah, usually you feel if something is pulled together last minute, you feel it. And I didn't feel it at all.
Or just the episode wouldn't really make sense if it's kind of a last minute rewrite. Or,
sure.
Or, but everything was very in line. I mean, I was actually impressed with all the nods to the show's history that they've done so far. Just Joey and her mom, they kind of tied up the Dawson divorce thing. Jen talking about, you know, getting sent there and then kind of wanting to go back. All that kind of came up. I thought it was a great just kind of nod to season one. And I was very impressed with the episode. But again, we don't know what threads from the original episode were in.
Right. Sure.
It could just be the Jen storyline that was rewritten. You know, I mean, who knows?
Well, good job, Tom, Gina, and Greg.
Yeah. How about that? So that is, again, like no fault of original writer Heidi Ferrer. It was not the script that she wrote. It was just the story that the showrunner gave Heidi wasn't flying. A similar thing kind of happened to me. I was on a Nickelodeon show and we had an episode between our main character and his on-screen girlfriend who was not a main cast member, but she was recurring. And they were dating in real life, of course, as teens do. And they broke up like a week before our episode was about to get shot. And the girl like refused to do the show. And in our episode, you could see the cracks. You could see, you know what I mean? So it is impressive that they pulled it off. Now, I will say, it sounds like these writers did a whole new story, but with ours, they kind of tried to save the, what was there, but they replaced it. Ironically, it was supposed to be their breakup episode, but when she refused to do the show, they decided to make that he was breaking up with his band.
Mm.
So they subbed in his band members for all of like the girl breakup scenes, and it was just kind of a mess. So the fact that they pulled it off so impressively, and just want to say that it is no fault of Heidi Ferrer's. That's just what is what happens sometimes, you know?
Quickly, can you just give, we may have talked about this before, but just a little brief description of like how a season goes, like you break this overall story and then people get scripts?
Yeah, so usually showrunner will gather, usually gathers with the entire writer's room to talk about story and an episode. And like we should do a Thanksgiving episode where Jen's mom returns and you just kind of talk through story. And the writer is usually determined either before you kind of start breaking a story, just based on, you know, every writer has in their contract, they're going to get 2 episodes, they're going to get 3 episodes, they're going to get 1 episode, whatever. Or if a writer feels like they have a really good handle, like one writer is just like, this episode is so relatable to me, they'll get that episode. So a writer is basically assigned an episode and they have to go off and write usually like an outline or a pitch document. And then once that's approved by the network, it goes to script. This show was such a hit, maybe they just went straight to script.
So it's not like they're just like, Heidi, go write the next episode. It's like, Heidi, go write the next episode. Here's what it's about.
Yeah. If there's a writer who really relates to Jen or had a life similar to Jen, like when I was 15, my mom shipped me from New York to like a small town in New Hampshire or wherever, you know, maybe that writer's seen as like the Jen writer or whatever. They might write Jen-centric episodes. It is funny, though, every show I've worked on, actors don't really seem to know how it works. And they're always like, are you the voice of my character? Are you the one who writes my character? And we're always just like, everyone writes everyone. But some people just get the voice better just based on your personality. You know, the point is every writer is executing the vision of the showrunner. So at the end of the day, all fault falls on the showrunner.
Copy that.
Let's get into this freaking episode. It's already been a freaking hour. We haven't talked about one thing.
Oh my God.
Oh, Marlon, I mean, let's talk about Jenna Pacey. Canoodling at the grocery store.
I wrote that down. Like, do they care? Or are they not trying to be discreet? Like, they're so PDA.
I don't think they're trying to be discreet. No.
But don't you think, I mean, obviously not. They're in public. They're smelling each other. They're canoodling. But what if Andy popped up? You know, like, I don't know. It's all very weird.
For sure. I just don't think, it's like they're having an affair or whatever, you know, but.
And they're not like.
Pacey's not having an affair yet. Wink. There's no sneaking around yet. But yeah, I mean, definitely was, I had the same reaction. I was like, oh, they're doing this.
They're doing it.
Because I remember the scene. I remember them shopping, but I did not remember them hugging. And I did not remember him smelling her hair.
Yes. Awkward.
I did not remember the little nitty gritty details of this. So it was very interesting. I mean, I definitely had the same reaction, but I don't think they have to sneak.
Yeah, well, they're not. So good.
Apparently, they're at a place called Molly's Market.
And you know what Molly's Market sells? Nantucket Nectar, just like every other place in Gateside.
And basically, Pacey is like, my Thanksgivings are terrible. My mom gets verbally abused by my drunk dad who watches TV and he's a misogynist, but I will be there because Thanksgiving is about family.
Yeah.
So he declines Jen's offer and Jen's like, Andy's not coming. She's going to be with Jack and her dad.
Yep.
Plot twist. Pacey decides to go to Graham's before his house and Jack and Andy's dad doesn't come to town, even though they said he was moving back, whatever, but won't even get into that.
Andy's just living alone in the house, having mental breakdowns every day.
Andy was back to her old Andy self in this episode, and I loved it.
Big time. She is spiraling in this episode.
Yeah. We love a good spiral.
I love it. Let's go chronologically. Next scene, Dawson is like, Mom, how's the apartment hunting going? Like, you're going to get out of here or what? Which is so crazy to me. First of all, it was Gail's house before she went to Philly. Like, what are we doing?
As we know, Gail is busting her ass. Gail is the breadwinner. Mitch is off.
Yeah.
Has no job, as Dawson pointed out, all of season 1 and 2. No passion, no direction. I guess he sold his loft with the cage.
I guess.
And he's moved back. Well, he is a football coach now, actually. So Mitch is winning the bread.
He's probably making 20 grand a year.
Which in 1999.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Went a long way.
35 by today's standards.
I just have to say, I don't want to be vain. Gail is looking freaking amazing. Okay.
You think she looks different?
Snatched. The body is snatched. She's just wearing more form-fitting clothes. And you're like,
oh, yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Not as many power blazers.
She looks freaking great.
She shed her anchor persona and now she's just a regular human.
And I like the little like bangsy hair thing happening.
She's feeling more New England mom than power suit business lady in a good way.
Yeah. She's cooking. She's baking. Dawson's confused. Mitch is watching TV. Football. It is Thanksgiving after all. It is so funny when Mitch tries to like bond with Dawson over like male stuff. And Dawson's like, yeah. I watch ET.
I thought you were going to say when Mitch comes in and tries to take a piece of the pie. Like, what do you think? Gail's going to bring a pie with a slice taken out of it? Men. Am I right?
Mitch. Mitch wants to dive into Gail's pie. And Gail's like, sir, I cannot go to Evelyn Ryan's house with a piece of the pie missing. Also, I love Mitch's like mock turtleneck thing happening. It's like not quite a turtleneck, but it is turtling enough. It's
Mitch
turtling
is
enough.
Turtling.
And that blazer, I mean, it's all working for me. He just looks so big.
Yeah, they're hot. They're both hot.
Big and strong. Oh, so hot. So we don't know until later, but they're divorced now and they're just loving this new vibe. It's just given them both. That's what they needed. They needed to get divorced and now they're just besties.
Yes. They're living the life that they've always dreamed of.
Yeah.
And Dawson's just standing in their way. Don't make me DTR, Dawson. I'm not ready.
What's DTR?
Define the relationship.
Oh my God, you're so hip. I believe Gail and Mitch are soft launching their new relationship. I think that's what the kids say, soft launch. Anyway, we're hip. We're cool.
They were trying to soft launch and Dawson forced them to hard launch.
Yeah.
All right. Then we go to Graham's house. Helen Lindley, first impressions, go.
Just stone cold Republican mother, pearls, power suit, stoic, kind of amazing in a terrible way, or kind of terrible in an amazing way.
Yeah.
What were yours?
I agree. I remember like expecting one thing from the Eve pictures. And then when you see her, she's something very different. They made her brunette. They made her very buttoned up. And I was like, oh, okay, I see. Yeah, she's very, first scene, very severe, doesn't fit with Jen. You see immediately the disconnect.
Yeah, so we know from episode 306 that part of the reason that Jen revolts from this socialite homecoming queen lifestyle is that her mom kind of did the debutante socialite kind of scene. So that was new information this season. And she just has that kind of uptight 90s New York uptown vibe.
100%.
One of those people who appearances are everything.
And it might just be a facade.
Who knows? So what? Who cares?
So what? Who cares?
And Jen is flabbergasted.
Yeah, she was really blindsided.
Her guest was flabbered.
Graham's tried. I mean, I would like to say she should have tried harder and like grabbed her and been like, your mother's upstairs. But, you know, she tried and Jen bulldozed her and got the shock of her life.
So Helen is here because Jen's dad got like stuck in like Singapore or somewhere. He's some like high powered businessman who got stuck somewhere. And so she's like, fine, I'll spend the holiday with my old mom and my skank daughter. And she slums it to Capeside.
I think the words they used was detained unexpectedly. And I was like, detained? What?
Well, honestly, Jen's parents, the casting is great because we don't meet her dad until later, but exactly what you picture.
Okay, so then we go to Bessie and Joey. I have so much to say here.
I know what you're going to say.
What am I going to say?
So the scene is about how Joey and Bessie are so bad at baking and cooking. And I think you're going to say, how did they run a restaurant if they're so bad at baking and cooking?
Okay, so many things. First of all, Bessie pulls a turkey out of the microwave.
Not the microwave. Maybe she hit the defrosting button. Maybe she's the only person in the world that uses the defrosting feature on the microwave.
Maybe. Are we to believe it's a very small turkey?
Are we to believe that she's bringing that turkey to Mrs. Ryan's?
Maybe it's like a vegan turkey. It's like one of those weird little...
In 1999, they were so popular.
Maybe I could see Bessie being like, you know, I'm going to do organic or vegan, or it's like...
Sure. Turkey. Vegan turkey stuffed with gizzards. They just put it in for authenticity.
I don't know what Bessie's doing. Look, they wrote this episode in a night. They wrote it in a night. They were like, it's Thanksgiving. Bessie needs some business. Let's give her. She's pulling a turkey out of the oven.
The microwave.
Everyone pulls turkeys out of the oven. Let's be cutting edge. Let's have her pull it out of the microwave.
All right. You're making me feel better. Okay. Then, yes, they ran a restaurant. And why is no one talking about Bodhi? He's literally a chef. If he can't be in the episode, get him on the phone. We don't need to hear his voice. Like, what? And Joey's like, man, I wish mom was here. She would know what to do. And I'm like, you're married to a chef.
Look, they didn't have cell phones.
Oh, so wherever Bodhi is, he can't speak. They have a landline.
He's on a retreat that is about meditation. He's with the monks. And he's in like the Buddhist temple. Like, I don't know, am I meditating or something? I don't know what he's doing.
I don't either.
He must have just been off filming something, or he must have been in LA and he comes back. He does come back. If we do ever get a writer on the show, our first question needs to be about Bodhi.
Yeah, 100%.
This keeps you up at night.
I need answers.
You are Bodhi's number one fan. His screen name was like Bodhi Baby. Bodhi Babe. Bodhi Babe 1986.
Where is Bodhi? Send in tips to whereisbodhi@aol.com.
Well, you know, it's so funny you asked that, because on my second rewatch of the episode, I looked for him in the group Thanksgiving scene, because I was like, maybe this is the episode where he like gets incepted back in.
Yeah, because that's what they do, right? They just start like planting him. Like, there's no like, hey, babe, I'm home from my retreat. It's
like... I'm home from Kuwait or wherever the war was in 1999.
All right, moving on.
I also just need to say... all the Joey grief stuff is really real, I feel like, you know, when this is now in the Abby death episode, she also, and Abby Morgan, rest in peace, she also said something similar, which is like, sometimes I feel like my mom's going to walk through the door. And the reason I laughed is because remember in that episode, Dawson was like, get over it. He was like, well, get over it. It's not going to happen. That's a child's wish. But I like that she said that, you know, because that was cute.
And it is like her whole arc this episode, when she's like, you know, you're going to wish that you could call them and ask them. There are questions that you're going to have and you're going to be so upset that you can't ask them. I was like, that's so real. Very real.
To anyone out there, get all the recipes, because it's hard when they're gone. You can't ask anything. Yeah. Also, the Potter household is getting turned into a bed and breakfast. There are
tarps.
Tarps. They're living in squalor.
I mean, not too much different than normal times.
That tofurkey is going to have like plaster on it.
Oh, yeah. It is not a good cooking zone.
It is not a good cooking zone. The FDA would not approve.
They would definitely not be getting an A or a B.
I just love how Bessie has like, you know, flour all over her.
She's just making a turkey in the microwave covered in flour.
I mean, the wall behind Joey, there is no wall. The wall is like torn off. You see like the wood panels in between the wall. It is life. I'm living.
We could do 3 episodes on this one episode.
Dawson's wearing the ugliest brown sweater. And apparently Gail got it for Thanksgiving.
She was like, Dawson, go change.
She's like, I'm going to be a fashion icon in my oversized dress shirt and my skinny jeans, and you're going to look like a fool.
The only way to make me shine is to make you look like an idiot.
I love her.
So this is what I don't remember. In this next scene, Dawson tells Gail that Helen is there. And Gail's like, do you think they're talking about a certain half-sister? So was it at the debutante or the HQ ball that he told her? Like, I don't remember him telling her. Or we just...
It wasn't on screen.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't having like a complete meltdown where I... block that out. So we just know that they're close, Gail and Dawson.
Oh, sure. Yeah, he confided in her. And so I wanted to ask you this. Would you tell Jen, if you were Dawson, would you tell your ex-boyfriend / current friend that they have a half-sister who was put up for adoption? And I say this to say, Dawson would tell Joey, I feel.
100%.
But I buy that he wouldn't tell Jen.
Well, I think we talked about this a little bit in that episode, that maybe he learned his lesson. Maybe he told a big thing at the end of season two with Joey and her dad, and now he's like a little apprehensive. He doesn't want to rock the boat. He doesn't want to, you know.
That is so good. They should have referenced that in this episode.
Because even Gail says, I didn't realize you had self-control like that to not tell her.
Yeah. And she should have said, well, I learned my lesson from Joey and her dad.
Yeah.
So good. You're so right about that. Something I wanted to ask you. In this episode, so the episode takes place outside a lot. Thanksgiving dinner is outside. There's a lot of dock scenes. Dawson and Helen talk by the dock. Grams and Jen talk by the dock. Everyone's talking out by the dock. It's so windy there. How do they not get the wind on the audio? Is it ADR'd or what's happening there? Because it doesn't look ADR'd. ADR is when they add the audio later in post-production.
The only ADR I clocked was when the baby Alexander is crying and Bessie's leaving. Bessie and Joey's is definitely ADR'd, and that's because the baby is crying underneath and they wanted to keep it consistent, so blah, blah, blah. But I think they must have just had really good mics, honestly. Like,
okay.
Every scene that shot has two kinds of microphone. There's a boom microphone, and then there's a lav microphone on each actor.
So boom is the microphone that's above them that someone holds off camera.
Mm-hmm.
And lavs are the individual mics that are like under their shirts or whatever.
Yeah. There's like a wire, like usually a mic pack and a wire that goes up under their clothes. And each are good for different things. And if one has some wind, usually the other one doesn't, or vice versa.
So how does that work when they're editing? There's a lav track and then there's a boom track?
Yeah. So for every take, there are multiple audio tracks. And usually the first one is the mix down, which is like all mics combined. So you can just use that to edit. And then if you need to go in because somebody's audio is a mess, there will be like Graham's lav mic, Jen's lav mic, you know, whoever's in the scene, and then the boom.
And those are all tied to the camera as far as like time codes go. So when they're all synced up to the, it's not like turn audio on, turn audio on, turn audio.
Yeah. So there's the camera operators, obviously, and then there's a sound operator who's in charge of like all of the sound for everything. But that's why a lot of people don't realize that's why the slate, the clapboard is so important, because you go to the camera and you do the, you know, everyone can picture it. You clap the little thing down.
Yeah.
And that is so you can be sure that audio is sunk directly to the camera. Like you line up that click noise with when you see it hit on mm-hmm. the visual, and that assures that everything's lined up.
Cool. Because I just noticed the wind in every, even the water is moving like so fast. It just looks so windy.
Well, I wrote it down like in New Jersey, it's almost never warm enough on Thanksgiving to eat outside. And it's even colder in Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. I love an outside.
I want to say we've brought up the Dawson's Creek website numerous times and how it had bonus footage, like supplemental footage where you could read Dawson's diary and his emails and stuff like that. I think it was Joey's diary, Dawson's emails from the summer. For this episode, it was a Jack entry. And this is what he wrote. So ever since Graham's discovered the internet, she's been bugging me to create a Cape Side cookbook, saying what a wonderful thing it would be for the young and old in Cape Side to contribute their family recipes to share with the community. Since Mrs. Ryan has been kind enough to let me live at her house, I thought I'd give her a little Thanksgiving treat. So I have asked everyone to include what they'll be preparing for Thanksgiving dinner this year. So the recipes are like online. And they kept it pretty in sync with the show. Like they have Gail's pumpkin pie. They have Andy's apple pie, which Andy said she was bringing. They have Pacey's cranberry sauce, which he brought, but he brought a can. Mitch's cornbread stuffing with oysters and pecans. Jen Lindley's Thanksgiving rolls. Graham's cranapple crisp. Joey Potter's curry turnips. Jack McPhee's braised celery. And Dawson's mashed potatoes. So all those recipes are online.
Wow.
I will be making one of them for Thanksgiving this year, naturally, because how can I not?
Oyster pecan stuffing, perhaps.
What a wild recipe that is, huh?
Yeah. Gail referenced it. She didn't say pecan or pecan, but she said oyster stuffing.
Pecan or pecan.
Let us know. Do a poll.
Did we ever talk about how Gail's name is spelled differently throughout the Dawson's Creek website online universe?
I don't know if we've ever talked about it on the show, but we've definitely talked about it with each other. Like a lot of things reference it as being G-A-L-E.
Mm-hmm.
Same as Gail from Scream.
Gail Weathers.
That we know because you see her name.
Yes.
And like a Chiron on screen. But obviously both characters created by Kevin Williamson.
So that's why I'm like, maybe it is G-A-L-E. I don't know.
We don't know. So we go with G-A-I-L.
Trish.
Can I just say that I love that Pacey arrives on a bike? It's those small details that gives Capeside that like small town feel. And I just love that.
Yeah, I love that too.
Joshua Jackson's eyes just glow in this episode.
He's like peak fall New England Pacey.
I just want to play with his hair.
Love it.
I recently did a poll on our Instagram about everyone's hairstyles. Like, I feel like they're most controversial hairstyles. And for Pacey, I picked his buzz cut from season four. Shockingly, a lot of people, the thing that won was not for me. That was one of the options, like, love or not for me.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I love him with that buzz cut, but I guess it's a little divisive.
I voted for love it.
Me too. I love that buzz cut on him.
You know what I don't like? The goatee.
Oh, in season six? Yeah, not for me.
Not for me.
But they write it in so brilliantly because Joey hates it too, and then she shaves it off.
Okay, so then Grams and Jen have a nice little chit-chat about Helen. Grams is like, I think that you're pleased to see her. I think that you've grown more in the last 14 months than you could even know. You're at a threshold. And Jen says, I'm not at a threshold. I'm at a crossroads. And Grams was like, all you have to do is put one foot in front of the other and head in that direction. And it was just such a sweet moment. And I know we've talked about like how we love their dynamic this season and how things are coming together. But for me, this is like the first episode where it's like cemented. Like Grams is so protective over Jen in this episode and protective of the Jen that she's become. And she's so proud of her and she like says it. I just loved it.
I agree. What I noticed is she also is treating Jen more like a daughter and she feels closer to Jen than she is her own daughter, Helen. And definitely a disconnect between Helen and Grams for sure.
Yeah. And the thing that I didn't lock until my second go around this time is Grams pulls Jen close and says, in some ways, the two of you are more alike than you'll ever know. Like hinting at Helen's past.
But this is what I didn't know. Does Grams know the secret?
I think she has to. Her daughter was pregnant for 9 months.
I feel like she couldn't have because that would have ruined Grams' life. Her daughter having premarital out of wedlock sex.
But how old was she when it happened, Helen? Teen, right?
We know that she's like 40, 41, 42 around there because she says at the end, don't wake up one day when you're 40 and like hate the person you married. I think Eve is about 19, 20. She's young enough to pass for a high school student. So maybe she's in her early 20s.
So maybe Grams is just referencing like she knew that Helen was living on the edge, but didn't necessarily know about the... Because I feel like Grams would have been like, give me the baby.
Yeah, that's why there's something about Grams knowing that just doesn't add up. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's a good point.
So there's a lot of, you know, they did wrap things up, but they left a lot of things ambiguous, which at the time probably drove me crazy because I wanted those like concrete scenes. But now I like the like nuance of it.
So then Andy and Jack come. Andy is losing it.
I really loved the scene, the dialogue when Helen gave Jen the pearls and Jen says, I have nowhere to wear it. I mean, I could wear it at home if my home is still New York City, but it's not anymore. Like you saw to it that New York is not my home anymore and I can't wear these in Cape Side. Oh, so coded.
Pearls lose their luster if you don't wear them. I had to look that up, why that happens. And it's because they dry out. You have to like have the oils and stuff.
From your skin?
I guess. I don't know. But just like putting them in a box makes them
dry.
Ruins them forever. Yeah.
Well, then Helen's wearing the pearls for the rest of the episode.
She was like, okay, sure. No problem. She doesn't try to convince her. It was a real half-hearted gift. So then Jack and Andy show up and Andy's spiraling. She sees Pacey. Pacey's like, hey, I'm just gonna go. And Andy's like, no, we were the ones that were not supposed to be here, so we will go. And Jack is like, you two need to chill out.
Yeah, he's like, Grams is going out of her way to invite us all over. Get it together. And they do.
They do.
Joey has a nice little speech where she tells Jen, you know, like, you only got one mother. They're only here for a short time. We all have parent issues. Can you give your mom a chance for me? Kind of a thing.
Yeah, that was a great scene.
Yeah. As we know, these two girls have had a tumultuous history, but they're friends now.
The thing that I hated in that scene was when Dawson goes, why is your mom here? And she's like, I don't know. And he's like, is she here for some reason other than Thanksgiving?
He's poking around.
Tighten up.
The secret's bothering him. He wants to tell Jen. You know, I'm going to give Dawson the benefit of the doubt in this episode.
Okay.
Okay.
As we said, it was really obnoxious to me that he just
prances up to her mom as she's having a nice moment on the dock and says, I'm Dawson Leary. I dated your daughter for a while. I still care about her very much. And then launches into letting her know about Eve.
The audacity, the boldness. But I think we're supposed to hate Helen. So maybe we're supposed to be rooting Dawson on in this moment. See, we're projecting ourselves into the parents now because we're in our I'm in my 40s. And I'm like, if this little boy ran up to me on Thanksgiving, first of all, I'd be three sheets to the wind by now. I'd be throwing my wine glass around the dock. I'd probably pull an Abby and fall in. But yeah, I'd be like, little boy, what are you doing here? Why are you talking to me?
Then we have Andy and Joey having a nice moment where Joey's trying to... Joey's like basically the voice of reason this whole episode. And she says to Andy, as a veteran of multiple breakups with the same boy, like, let me just tell you that things will get better. This will pass, you know. And Andy is like, you two have gotten close lately. Does he talk about me? And Joey's like, not really, Andy.
Not at all, you dumb bitch. And then Jack's like, Andy talks about you every other day, and sometimes she talks about you really angrily.
Yeah.
And then Pacey's like, she's the one that cheated on me. And then Jack's like, yeah, but imagine how that makes her feel. She's probably really sad about that. I would forgive her.
You love her though.
I mean, they were apart for 4 months. 4 months. It's a long time. Also, she was having a psychotic break.
She was.
She was on 100 milligrams of Xanax.
She was basically comatose.
It's basically her doctor's fault. He was over medicating. He was over medicating her. She's a victim of the pharmaceutical industry. At least her hair is growing out. I know that really triggered you last few episodes.
Her early hair in this season was brutal. Speaking of hair, I love Jen's hair in this episode. Jen is Jen.
Yeah.
Jen, I've said it before, I'll say it again.
Jen is Jen and Pacey is Pacey. And Dawson is Dawson. And everyone just is everyone.
This is why you tune into this podcast, for these hard-hitting opinions. No, Jen.
You're saying this is quintessential Jen.
Yeah, Jen has become herself. Season one, Jen was putting on the good girl act. Season two, Jen was swung the other side. The pendulum has like come to a steady place in the middle. She is, Jen's Jen, okay?
Leveling out. We didn't talk about how many rolling pins Grams has.
I didn't notice.
Oh, good Lord. Go to any kitchen scene. They're all hung on the wall.
They're on the wall.
She has a rolling pin for her every situation. Don't you worry. Grams is ready. Grams is ready for any type of flour situation, any type of unleavened bread situation.
Do you need a pie? Do you need pasta? Do you need...
While you look for the rolling pins, I just want to discuss this mystery family who's at Thanksgiving dinner. These old people and their son, who's kind of cute. Like, Jack should have been in there.
Well, no, he shouldn't, because it's Graham's church group, and they would have thrown his little gay body into the creek with the cinder block for being a sinner.
True.
Oh, I do see.
There's at least 4 rolling pins, if not 6.
There are 5. There are 5. And there's a spot for 6, so maybe that's the one she used today.
Right.
I wonder if it's occasion-based or if it's based on the decorative dish that she's making.
I wonder if it's decorative.
Oh.
No, those are my prop rolling pins.
No, we don't use those. Good for her.
And they go around and say what they're thankful for and blah, blah, blah. They're all thankful for friends. Alexander is the cutest baby I've ever seen. I love a sweater. I want it.
I had to Google, Dawson says to Mitch and Gail, what's going on with you two? You're just acting like Robin Laura Petrie, and I need to know what's going on if it affects me. Do you know who Robin Laura Petrie
are? Who is that? No.
It is Dick Van Dyke and his wife from the Dick Van Dyke Show.
Oh, okay. So they're just being like Stepford-y?
Yeah.
I just can't stand his references.
Yeah, it felt like Dick Van Dyke Show isn't obscure, but Robin Laura Petrie, like, that's not like a household name. I thought that was an interesting reference.
Maybe in the 90s it was, because it was like closer to the time when the Dick Van Dyke Show was on. I don't know.
Do you know that Dick Van Dyke married a 40-year-old in 2012 when he was 86?
Good for her.
And now he's 98.
I did know that he was 98 because he was just on Days of Our Lives.
Huh.
And he was barely there, but he was there.
She's keeping him young.
They got him for 2 weeks or whatever, and he turned out to be one of the main character's fathers. I was like, this is so absurd. Like, a character who's like never known who his dad was, or has like known multiple people as his dad.
I've always said that I'll be really sad when he dies, and now I'm like, he had a good life.
98's really a long time.
Good for him. Good for them.
As we said, the vibe of Thanksgiving dinner is like thankful for my friends. And then when Jen meets up with her mom is like, I'm actually happy I sent you to Gramps's because you made amazing friends and I've always wanted amazing friends. And Jen says, friends are great, but family's family and you are my family and you sent me away with no safety net. And then her mom's like, sure, I should have called in the last year and a half, but I didn't.
And also, it's not like she kicked her out of the house and said, good luck, kid. She sent her to live with Gramps.
Helen tells Jen off camera about the adoption and everything. And Jen kind of says, so instead of bonding with your daughter over catching her having sex and telling her something about your life, you sent her away and lied to her and made her think it was all about her being a terrible person.
And that's what spurs Jen to take Basie into the shed and try to get busy with him. And he says, no angry sex. What's your take?
Just Pacey being a good guy. He doesn't want Jen to do anything that she's going to regret. Or, you know, they've had trouble hooking up because Jen has found the whole thing so awkward and she's been laughing. And I think she, now that she's ready, she's coming from like an emotional place. And he's just saying, yeah, we should do this when we're both
of sound mind. Yeah.
Yeah. Dawson tells Joey that his parents are divorced, which he also found out off camera. And that's the new dynamic that he's sensing. And they basically say, at this point, any movement is good movement because they've been living in limbo for so long and they agree that their found family is just as good as regular family.
Very cute.
I'm liking these friend moments between them, you know?
Definitely. And he jokes, let's do something crazy, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And then says, or we could just have a mind-blowing 3-hour conversation, which is classic Dawson. But him saying sex for a second was like, are we going to do something crazy?
Oh my God, can you imagine? Can you imagine even having sex on Thanksgiving? Oh my God, so full.
Such a good point.
Food coma.
No, thank you.
That's a pre-dinner activity.
Yeah, and dinner's at 2 o'clock, so.
Post-turkey trot, pre-dinner.
Really small window.
Yeah. I will say, I did like Pacey saying, your parents are people who make mistakes. They're just like us. Like, we put parents on our pedestal, but that's like a childhood fantasy. And that's a really interesting theme for a YA show that I think is really relatable. And then that motivates Jen to move on to make up with Helen. And she kind of just says, like, I see now that you never hated me. You hated yourself. And sending me away was because you couldn't see your young self and face your past. And Jen is freeing herself from the anguish. That's why I think this is a really good episode. And I'm so impressed they wrote it in a night, is because it really does put a bow on Jen's first two seasons.
Definitely. You can feel and you can see that weight be lifted from her. She just has like this lightness. And she says, call me sometime. The casualness of how they leave it, it's great.
Yeah. And I will say too, to your point from earlier about how Grams and Jen just seem so close this episode and how they feel more mother-daughter than Grams and Helen. Grams comes up to Jen during her goodbye scene with Helen and kind of grabs on to Jen. And it's a physical personification of their standing together against Helen. And it is nice. I mean, Grams, I don't even know if she has a line in that scene, but she's just holding on to Jen and they're a united front. And it was a very effective image, I thought.
I completely agree.
And then there's the campfire scene, which is so cute.
So cute.
Pacey has gone to his family dinner and come back. And he pulls up next to Jen and he says, well, I decided at the last minute that I wasn't going to walk into my parents' disaster Thanksgiving. And Pacey goes and sits next to Andy. And it's cute. And they kind of bicker.
He says, what am I going to hang out with my family who think I'm an idiot when I could be hanging out with my friends who also think I'm an idiot? And then Dawson says, it's been a while since we've all been together. And unbeknownst to him, it will be another while until they're all together again, this particular group. And he says, in a world where the people who raise you let you down, it's an honor and a privilege to have you guys to turn to.
Yeah.
And that was so cute.
It's so cute. I love them.
And then Joey cuts the emotional tension by saying, I can't wait for the Oscar speech. Just kind of like taking a little jab at Dawson. But man, what is better than a bonfire fire pit moment in the fall?
Honestly, truly nothing. I've actually been thinking about getting one of those little fire pits, but I don't know who would come over. All of you left.
So sad.
Mackenzie lives in Burbank.
You're basically Helen Lindley. The charity events will stop. the social club will lose my phone number.
Well, that's this freaking episode. And it was so good. And I'm so happy that they pulled off such a successful episode in one night.
Oh my gosh. I'm sure the stress was immense and it really worked.
Yeah. Good for them. Now, what shall we be drinking the next episode? Episode 309.
For episode 309, Four to Tango, we will be drinking the Tango cocktail. It is grenadine and blonde beer. It kind of sounds like a adult Shirley Temple, to be honest.
Yeah. Remember grenadine? God.
I always thought in my head that grenadine was cherry syrup because they always put cherries in it, but it's pomegranate.
Really?
Yeah. Who knew?
Is that why it's the grenna, pomegranate, grenna?
Look at you. What are you, a writer? What are you, good with words?
Well, next week's episode, Four to Tango, episode 309. We're cruising through season 3.
We are slowly approaching that halfway point.
As previously discussed, there is a showrunner shift somewhere around this time, episode 308, 309. It kind of kicks over to Greg Berlanti and the current staff. The beginning of season 3 had like kind of an abrupt change in tone that we love. However, a lot of people do not. And obviously the cast didn't. So there will be another kind of tonal shift. And to me, it goes from like the fall of season 3 is like this young, hot, everyone looks different. It's like sexed up. And now it's going to go back to more season 1-y. Angst, longing, romance, grounded, real people, real problems kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Second half of season 3 is a lot of people's favorite. I'd say most people's favorite. So we're headed there. We're not there quite yet, but...
Now's the time. This is the turning point.
I remember next week's episode and I'm excited to watch it because it's been a long time.
Yes.
Can't wait.
All right. We'll see you then. Bye.
Bye.